Welcome to the Live Awakened podcast, life coaching for women physicians of color. Create more freedom to simply be who you want to be. Do the things that make you feel alive and create a deeper connection with those you love. It's time to choose you. I'm your host, Dr. Payal Patel Guile.
Hi, ladies. Hope you're having a lovely day. Payal here. Today is one of those really fun days. We're going to have a guest and we're going to have a good friend of mine. I say that about everyone, but I have a lot of friends that I love and they're just not acquaintance friends. Like, we have deep relationships. And so that's something that I have developed as I've gotten older. But my friend Ni Chang is here and she is a physician. She's a pulmonologist. She's a fellow integrative doc and she's a mindfulness guru. Now I'm going to say that she's going to correct me when I let her introduce herself, but I just wanted to give her some time to tell us a little bit about her and who she is.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Payal, for inviting me on your podcast. And it's always lovely to have a conversation with you because you know we go deep and it's always so rich. And so I'm so looking forward to this conversation with you. And like Payal mentioned, I am a pulmonologist, an integrative pulmonologist at Scripps Health and Coastal Pulmonary Associates. I also hold a voluntary appointment at UC San Diego on faculty there. And the mindfulness teacher and the integrative medicine piece came about when I was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 31 in my second year of pulmonary fellowship, which drastically changed the way that I live my life and how I practice medicine. I became a patient of integrative medicine. I started practicing mindfulness seriously. I really then prioritized my own health for the first time ever. And it took me having cancer in order to do that. And I'm still constantly a work in progress and practicing all of that. So glad to be here with all of you.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. There's so many things in just what you said that we can go into. I want to start with how we met because I think it's a fun story. And we're both smiling. You guys can't see that. So some of you guys may know that I took a trip to Bora Bora for a retreat. It was a coaching retreat with Dr. Sunny Smith with EWP. Now, Sunny was a friend of mine before Sunny knew coaching. So that was kind of like a fun thing. And she had a retreat that Ni Chang actually signed up to go to because she knows her separately. And I entered my name in this possibility of winning the trip, which we were going to pay it forward, which we did. And I didn't know who Ni Chang was, but like instantaneously, like I think everyone there was just so excited to be in like paradise. And I think Ni Chang and I are that almost the same where we both love the water and turquoise water in particular. And so there's so much joy in that. And we just became buddies. So when COVID hit, which was right after that trip happened, I think 6 months later, and Ni Chang decided to start this mindful healthcare collective group where she asked a bunch of her friends who she thought would be good at contributing. And she asked me, I was like, hell yeah, like for sure, like anything for you. And I was so honored to be even asked because, you know, I had a story about, well, why would I be asked? Like, what's so great about me? And this is obviously, guys, the 1.0 version. We're talking to the 2.0 version right now. And I got to know her so much better. And that's when you get to really see someone's generosity, their humility, their love for humanity. And just you fall in love and more with this beautiful human being. So that's how we met. Do you want to share anything about that, Ni Chang?
Yeah, just that so much gratitude for you and your contributions to the Mindful Healthcare Collective, which was born out of knowing that healthcare professionals were already burnt out going into the pandemic, and we were just going to get more burnt out during the pandemic. And it was really a grassroots movement to try to hold space and to build community and to alleviate suffering so that we, the healers, could heal ourselves so that we could continue to heal others. And so thank you for being part of that.
Yeah, you know what's interesting to me is people who have gone through some form of suffering are the most generous people I know. And I think like it's so obvious in this situation. And the fact that you decided to do this, but I want to say everyone who said yes to you has also gone through suffering, you know, and like I've shared with my audience about my own suffering and my own struggles, and very different from having a health diagnosis. You know, it's relational trauma, you know, all those things. But that's so amazing. And that's why we do the work that we do, because we want other people. And so I'm just going to, you guys can't see Ni Chang, but we are both Asian. And so we'd like to like promote this work that we do, which is not, how do I say this? Like common in our communities, right? Like doing all the studying and having the families and all that stuff is common, but like the emphasis on mental health is something that we are kind of pioneering in our own spaces. So May, Mental Health Awareness, Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, like what a perfect month to talk about these things. And I've been talking about generational trauma. You know, I did a workshop, but I really wanted to hear your story and your version of, you know, what comes up for you when we talk about this immigrant experience and generational trauma? Like, what have you experienced?
Yeah, there's so much there in terms of my story, so many layers. And I will start off with the fact that I was born in Taiwan and immigrated to the States when I was 5. So barely knew any English. And luckily, my parents were able to take my brother and I together during the immigrant experience in the first couple of years, because I know that that wasn't possible for many in our generation. For instance, my husband had a different experience immigrating to the United States. So that being said, I feel in retrospect very, very grateful that we stayed together as a family unit, as tough as that was. My dad was a pharmacist in Taiwan, and moving to the States, he couldn't get a pharmacy position right off the bat because the licensure didn't reciprocate. And so I remember very poignantly day 2 of arriving in the States with my 3-year-old brother and 4 suitcases, leaving our home behind, and my dad going to the local mall eatery, pedaling my uncle's bike to this eatery place, and got a job cutting meat for the food court. So it was a very humbling experience, and there was a lot of financial money scarcity mindset that became part of my reality very quickly. And so like the value of a dollar, work ethic, all of that, the tendency for overwork was very real in my family because there was a true scarcity that was present. Now, decades later, we've had a very, I would say, lucky chain of events. And now where I'm at, that type of mentality of money scarcity and overwork is actually quite detrimental. So it's been a bit of a process in trying to unlearn some of those unhelpful thoughts and beliefs. And it's still a work in process. So yeah, I'll start with that. And then there was the whole generation of the latchkey kids, where we walked ourselves to the bus stop, went to school. There was the expectation to get very good grades. And then we came home, oftentimes either to an empty house. And so we had to kind of fend for ourselves and prepping our own meals and getting our homework done. And then our parents would either come home like rather late, or in my situation, my mom was home, but she worked the graveyard shift for the post office. And so she was sleeping. And so our house had to be very quiet when we came home from school. And unless it was like a 911, like blood gushing somewhere emergency, we were to uphold that sense of quiet and tranquility so that my mom could sleep and get the rest she needed to go to work that night. So it was with that kind of mindset that I grew up in the household, where I'm meeting the fact that I grew up with a lot of childhood emotional neglect. And as I've learned more about that, that's actually one of the ACEs, one of the adverse childhood events, and learning more about that and processing that with my own therapist. Also at the same time, like knowing that my parents were doing the best that they could, but also feeling self-compassion for myself in recognizing the fact that there were a lot of attributes of emotional support that were lacking in my childhood, that has then informed the way that I am now, just as I am, imperfectly perfect.
Yeah. Which actually is interesting, because I think there's also a component of culture there too, right? You know, let's say this was not the situation. Let's say this was your parents in Taiwan or whatever, like being emotionally available, not being emotionally available may have just been the norm in the community.
Right. That too, culturally speaking, in my family, which is Taiwanese Chinese, there wasn't in my household a lot of talk about how I was feeling and how they were feeling and how my brother was feeling. Definitely emotions were not part of our
dialogue
lexicon or a conversation like ever.
Yeah, it's still like, I think it's interesting because look, we're both Asian, but it's a different, completely different dynamic, right? Because when you're telling your version of your childhood, it's like in my head, I'm reliving a lot of my experience. And so, you know how your parents were always like, they're working outside the home. My parents had a motel. So the house was built into the motel. So my parents are 100% always at work and always with us. And that was one of the career options that they chose in our community so that they could take care of their kids or whatever it is. But I remember like not being able to make noise, because if the bell rings and the customers get up, you know what I mean? They're coming and you just can't be noisy. And one of the interesting things, and you're going to probably think this is fascinating, is like, we couldn't go out together to dinner as the family ever, because one person always had to run the motel. So it was like, it's your birthday. And so there was usually two options, like pizza or Mexican or whatever. It's like, who do you want to go with, mommy or daddy? You know, and I am like thinking about it, I'm like, my kids, my friends never had to make that kind of decision, you know, like not that I'm aware of, right? And so like, it makes me think about like, how this is so different, you know, for my kids now, because they're like a whole different, oh my God, they're just so different. They're like, is it organic when we're eating? Or like, is this, you know, it's like so opposite. But it's important to acknowledge, you know, like, yes, they did the best that they could. And you talk about emotional abandonment. I want to talk about entanglement in my community, like in each other's business 24/7, you know, kind of thing. And it's almost like it continues in a lot of my clients too. We talk about like how that relationship is so entangled even in adult years, you know? And so I think that's also part of that. We get to decide how much of what we've experienced we're going to pass on to the next generation, right?
Yes, we have agency and we get to choose, however hard that may be, because the easier path is to pass on some of these traumas and these tendencies and false beliefs on, because that's what we knew, but now we know better.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it also is important to give ourselves a lot of compassion. And Ni Chang knows that I struggle with that, you know, and this has been like a thing that I, more recently, I'm like, oh, it's all good. But like, even in that journey, like we're like, oh, I could do better. You know, actually we say I should do better, but you guys know I don't like the should, because should is could plus shame. So like I could do better, you know? And sometimes no, I can't. And that's okay. And I don't have to feel good about it, but I also don't have to add more heaviness to whatever situation, whatever I'm going through.
Yeah, there's sometimes some blame, shame, and guilt associated with reckoning with our past. And I think part of what's helped me in integrating aspects of my childhood into my current authentic self has been the allowing of those difficult emotions and some grief also with what should have been in our childhood and grieving that, but also bringing in the aspects of gratitude and lots of self-compassion. I think that we all could use more self-compassion in general, especially when it comes to our immigrant stories and experiences.
Which I feel like is not even part of the vocabulary for most of us. Like it just never existed. If I kind of look at, you know, like my ancestors, look at like extended family, being sacrificial and being humble, especially as a woman too, like it is so glorified in the community. And I'm like, well, of course it is, because if we made this be a good thing, then it would benefit all the men. It would benefit everyone else if we kept ourselves small. And so we just normalized that women and girls seen but not heard, you know, you, the guys eat first. I don't know if, you know, how it is for your family, but I remember not even too long ago where it's like there was limited seating. So women do all the cooking and then the guys would eat first, guys and kids, whatever, would eat first. And then the women would sit at the end with whatever, you know, was left.
Yeah, my household is also quite patriarchal in that respect. And, you know, as you were telling me about that, I'm drawing some parallels between our childhood with our expectation and the need for our households to be quiet. And so silence and quiet and not being seen or heard was what was desired of us in our own households. And like, how does that translate into how our adulting shapes out to be?
Well, I can tell you that because we work with people all the time who feel like their voice is being suppressed in their careers, like in their workplaces. They're not getting the raises, they're not getting the promotions. You know, they're like, the good Asian doctor, or, you know, who's a woman, right? Like everyone loves hiring them, you know, but you get frustrated because you're being passed up. And the reality is there's the situation, but also how are you passing yourself up?
Right? I love that. Yeah. So we can also face our own internalized racism as well. Very difficult to do. How are we complicit in some respects with upholding certain stereotypes as well? It's a difficult, challenging predicament all around.
And also a great opportunity.
You know? Absolutely.
I just find it like, I think we can look at one situation in so many different ways. And this is not about toxic positivity. This really is retelling and reframing stories and situations in a way that benefits you to move the needle forward in a direction that you want. The needle may be like, you may not want it to go anywhere, and that's okay too, you know, but being able to have the choice to do it versus feeling stuck. Cause that's one thing I feel like I'm hearing a lot of in for a lot of women in our age group too.
Yeah. The feeling stuck is all too pervasive, especially in this like strange, weird post pandemic, but it's not really post pandemic. It's more like integrated COVID time that we're shifting into, how our roles have changed and how we see ourselves and how do we present ourselves authentically, even if it means disappointing others.
Right. Which is the hardest, right? Because I find when like I'm working with people, they're like, I want change, but I don't want to make other people uncomfortable or have confrontation or rock the boat. So it's easier for me to just avoid it. And the first thing I say is, well, how has that worked out for you thus far? Right. And they're like, oh. I said, listen, it's been hard no matter what. You get to decide which hard you're going to pick, the hard that keeps you where you are or the hard that's going to get you where you want to go. Right. Which is the human experience for all of us. There's also the fun. There's also the excitement, the joy, the passion too. Like for every hard, there's also the other.
Absolutely.
Right.
There's a myriad of choices, but we can train ourselves to see them. We can give ourselves permission to see those choices.
Right. And it doesn't happen overnight. This has been years of work. I know you started your journey after your diagnosis and after you went through your treatment, right? And it's different from what I did, and you did the mindfulness stuff. And like, I love that I've also learned some mindfulness work in our, we both did our integrative fellowship. So I graduated a couple of years ago. And what I learned was just like planting the seed. Like she has gone deep down and done so much work, but I love incorporating that into even the breath work. Gosh, like I'm a naturally a little bit anxious person. And, you know, it makes sense because I care. And I say that to a lot of people. I'm like, if you're feeling anxious about something, like I tell my kids, I'm like, it just means you care. You know, you get to decide, you know, how much of it it's going to stop you from doing what you're doing, but like just stopping and breathing. And I notice I go for walks now sometimes, and I'm not trying to just put something in my ears. You know, I'm like, oh, look at the birds. Oh, the flower, you know, because there's going to be a time when maybe that walk is not going to be so easy for me to do, you know, and that's okay.
Yeah, mindfulness can be practiced anytime, anywhere, doing or not doing anything. And mindful walking is a great, wonderful practice in motion.
You're going to think this is funny. So my two favorite mindfulness activities are probably not the common ones that people talk about. One is gardening. The other one is baking.
Oh, those are great.
I'm just like obsessed with it because there's something about being away from devices and just like when there's precision or there's just like creativity involved, it's just so magical. And I think incorporating that with the next generation is so important too.
Absolutely. With our children, they will mirror what they see, whether or not we like it. Even with their mirror neurons that we also have as adults. But more than anything, we're also teaching them how to become self-sufficient and eventually grow up to be adults.
Yeah. How has that been for you, you know, with your journey and then now with your parenting? We didn't talk about your kids yet, but like, how has that been for you to go from where you were and now with the tools that you have with your parenting?
Oof, I work a lot with my therapist on parenting. And I think my mindfulness practice has definitely helped me leaps and bounds in my own parenting journey, because the easy path would have been to follow many of the patterns that I experienced with my parents' parenting style, or lack of parenting, I would say. In some respect, though, I have to be mindful that I don't overcompensate for the emotional neglect that I experienced, and not helicopter and not snowplow. So it's a careful balance, ebb and flow, always learning along the way. But it's thanks to coaches like you who help the journey that is inevitably going to be difficult. Parenting journeys are difficult, but they are also great fun, full of love and, as you just said, opportunity. And it's okay and very much necessary, very necessary to get help along the way.
Yeah, and expectations, right? I think that this is something that, so I came from a helicopter parent situation, right? So it's a very opposite thing. So like still my mom will be like, what are you going to feed the kids today? I'm like, I'm going to starve them. I'm like, what do you think? Like they're fine, right? But like I have decided ahead of time, now that I have these tools, that shifting the expectations I have for my kids, but also for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because being like an A plus type A person, like most firstborn female immigrant kids, like I also took that into my parenting space. And then I was like burning out from that. And I was like, oh, no. Half the time, the kids are going to be a pain in the neck. I expect them to be a pain in the neck. And half the time, I'm going to screw up too. Giving them grace and giving myself grace has been the best thing in this journey because I normalize for them not being perfect. Right? That's such a gift we can give our kids.
Yes, the normalization of imperfection.
Yeah.
How wonderful would that have been in our own childhood and throughout our medical school and residency fellowship curriculum?
Oh my God. Sometimes I think about some of the most traumatic time was intern year. I feel like everyone's listening and nodding their heads right now. Like a lot of my audience, they are like listening in the car when they're going to work and we have shorter episodes and stuff. And I get feedback from you guys and it's like, yeah, you guys, like we don't talk about the little T's, right? Like medical training is a T, you know, like, I don't even know if I've ever heard that anywhere, but it was for me. And there's a moment where some of it was a big T.
Yeah. I think reckoning also with some of the really kind of inhumane experiences that we all witnessed or experienced ourselves is part of our healing journey too. And I'm so glad that there are changes being made and have been made already in medical training curriculum, one of which has been the mandate of inclusion of well-being curricula. Mm-hmm. But gosh, I feel like that is generations too late, albeit better late than never, of course, but still, it's kind of on us. It's our responsibility to do the work to integrate prior traumas when we're ready, so that we might feel the freedom to express and live our lives as our true, imperfect, authentic selves.
Man, that is so good. Honestly, we could keep talking forever. And I promise Nichang that my episodes are shorter. And so like, if I'm going to talk to her more, I'm going to put it on a different episode. So like, I want to end with that, like living our true authentic selves. It has been magical for me to finally get to know me. Right? Like, I know that sounds interesting at 40 plus year olds telling you this, but like, I didn't know what I really wanted or who I was until now. And the first step was to acknowledge that I wasn't living my authentic life. Like, was it me talking or was it my ancestors? You know, was it the culture? And now I'm like, oh, interesting. I actually don't care about this, you know, but I care what people think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, life is too short to not live your authentic
self. And you have actually experienced this, you know, with having your health scare. So it's so, so important. So we're going to put all the information about Nichang in the show notes and like what she offers or whatever. But is there anything else that you'd like to share? What something that's coming up for you that you want to share with my audience? Go ahead.
Just a reminder that we are all doing the best that we can. And
we have so many choices, but part of it is giving ourselves permission to see and choose differently. So thanks so much for having me on.
So fun. Oh my God. Just, she's such a lovely human being. Please. She has her own, she does a podcast. She does some mindfulness like retreats and different activities, which I'll put into the show notes, but I just love bringing my friends on here and just tells me a lot about like who I surround myself with because they're genuine, authentic, whole beings. So, all right, you guys have a lovely day. I'd love to hear back from you. And if you guys want to hear more about this topic, like, let me know. This is for you guys. We're here to represent and spread this kind of mental health awareness in our communities too, right? For everybody, but also our communities. All right, have a lovely day. Bye.
Hey, if you're ready to advocate for yourself by listening to your inner voice so you can live in freedom, wake up every day with purpose, and enjoy your work and family, check out my website at www.pileguile.com. On the website, you'll have the opportunity to join my program, sign up for a free workshop, or just check out my blog. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please tell a friend, leave a review, or just reach out. I'd love to hear from you.